So this is the first time we have come face to face since, you know, the disaster. Getting right into it, eh?
Well,
you're here.
Not beating around the bush.
So I reach out. Here's how I play it. Flames losing five. Not good. Can't text.
No.
Stay away.
Yeah.
I mean, stay away. So I give it maybe a week, 10 days to kind of let it breathe. And it's like, hey, so what? Probably go for a beer, maybe, you know, talk about things. The reaction I get is not quite ready to be seen in public.
Yeah.
All right. That's, we'll give it a little more time.
Let it breathe. Let it breathe.
Yeah. So it took a while for you to come out of hiding.
Yeah, it took a while.
Like a bear.
Yeah. No, it was... We did a couple of season ticket holder events the last two nights at the Dome, and I said the analogy I used is doing the 100-yard dash in an 80-yard gym.
Mm-hmm.
It ends quickly and it hurts like hell, and that's what it was. When you invest a lot in it and you have expectations, and it comes to an end quickly like that, it takes your breath away. So there we were. We weren't in a great mood for a while. So
the thing I liked about it, because Conroy was in one day, and this is going to sound like I'm blowing smoke here, but the thing that I liked, the message that I liked, was not, hey, we had a great regular season. We got a lot of great things going on. I mean, look at Mike Smith. Look at, you know, there was none of that. It was, this is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
This is unacceptable. We had a great regular season, but that was not the goal.
Mm-hmm.
I was as an observer, and if I'm a fan, that's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear content with losing in five after winning a division, mm-hmm. because that doesn't appease anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you have to keep some perspective. You're absolutely right. The object is to win when it's the most important time. So that was our feeling. We didn't get the job done. We fell below and fell short of what we had hoped of accomplishing. Having said all that, with time comes a little bit of perspective, mm-hmm. too. And, you know, if we sat in this chair a year ago at this time and said, listen, after 82 games, here's what we're going to accomplish, it does show that steps that are taken. And I think we all want to get to the finish line, you know, quickly, and that's the goal. But, you know, I remember coming here 5 years ago. It's about 5 years ago. We were picking fourth in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And in you know, 5 years later, you win a division. You win your top team in the conference. The progression is there. We've taken steps. And the development of our team, you know, the reality is now you have expectations that you're going to have success in the spring. And that's the sign of a good team, you know. And so I like the progression. We can't lose sight of the season that was and the things that happened, and there was a lot of good. But ultimately the where we are going to judge ourselves now is, you know, having success in the spring. Having said all that, it's tough to get there. You know, you have to get in first.
Yeah.
And the league's tight and all those types of things, but it shows where our team has gotten to.
We all saw it. We all know what happened because, what happened?
Mm.
The team didn't resemble much like what we saw in the regular season. Mm. Even in losses, they were in games, they took it to teams, and they were just a long way. So rather than what happened, why did it happen in your estimation? Because like you say, you've had some time now to really kind of chew on it.
Mm. Well, you never quite know. I think there's a lot of things. It's not one or two things. I think when you have a series like we did, there's a bunch of things. You know, we faced a team. I think first of all, coming in, everybody, you're looking and saying one versus eight. I don't know, these one versus eights, there is no 1-8 anymore. It's they're all good teams that get in. So the margin for error, the days of saying, okay, you know, look at this team is such a you know, favored so heavily. They're a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in hot. You know, I think that's if you go back and look at even throughout the league, those teams that were fighting and scratching and crawling the last month of the season, they came in sort of playing for their lives, it seemed like, the last 20 games of the year. I thought a big difference in the game. I thought we didn't have the ability to contain their speed and defend their speed. Their top guys were outstanding. Throughout their lineup, I just thought an area of a strength of ours throughout the year was our ability to play with pace, to attack teams. As we attacked, they whether it be with or without the puck, because we tried to forecheck, we got skated. Mm-hmm. And
so is it because you don't have speed, or you didn't use it effectively? Because yeah, you didn't strike speed. Me as a slow speed.
No,
a slow
we've
team.
Got we've got speed in our team. We didn't execute well enough. And I thought, listen, game one, we won 4-0. It wasn't indicative of the game. It wasn't a 4-0 game. It was a close game, but we played well. We did enough to win. I thought that game two was a big turning point. You know, them getting a game out of here, they got some momentum, and then from really that point on, I thought we were on our heels. Obviously, game three was we were poor, they were real good. You know, game four again, probably our best game in the series is game four. I thought we were real good, had a 2-0 lead. You're in the third period. They press the last 10 minutes, they tie it up, they score in overtime. So mm-hmm. again, as difficult and as much as we underperformed, you can be sitting there coming back home 3-1, right? In a couple of overtime games.
But it didn't feel that way.
No, it didn't feel that way. But like I said, in some cases it was closer than that. We weren't good in game five, but, I don't think we were a slow team. We didn't execute the way we did in the regular season, and they did. And
the thing is, in the playoffs, you don't care about style points. I mean, St. Louis has got to where they are right now, and it's not because every win that they've gotten, they've deserved it. Some nights it's Binnington. Some nights, oh, look, it's a bounce in front for Patrick Maroon, and he scores.
Yeah.
Just win. And I really do. I feel like if you'd just got through that round, you'd have been better.
Yeah.
You would have seen more of what we saw through the regular season. There's no way to know, obviously, but it just felt like as much, and it's not a lot, but some of your players have gone through the playoffs or have gotten into it, but it still felt new, like you said, in terms mm-hmm. of expectations.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't fail now. If you come in on house money as a 6, 7, 8 seed, well, let's try and upset somebody, and we got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
This was different, and I just wonder if some of the younger guys had a hard time handling that.
Well, a little mixed too. We had, I think, half our roster was playing their first playoff game, right? So there was a little inexperience there, and as much as you know, we all talk about getting experience. This is what it is. This is sometimes you leave with scabby knees and a bloody nose, and that's getting experience. But I did think that. As you know, so much a big part of playoffs is managing emotions and momentum. And I didn't think we did a real good job of that, you know. And some of that is experience. And so there's a whole bunch of things that go into it. At the end of the day, as you said, you know, at that time of the year, you don't care how you get it done. You're not going back after games and critiquing wins. You're just, at the end of the day, it's a race to four. And I thought we got overwhelmed in certain spots, but as I said, these are the experiences you take with you. The league is full, and teams that have had ultimate success, you can go back a number of years. I mean, before last year, there was a narrative that you're never going to win with Ovechkin, and Washington's never going to get it done.
Yeah.
They keep pounding on the door enough times they get
it done.
Yeah,
I know.
Right? So as painful as it is, as difficult as it is, as sour as you are at the end of the day, these experiences that you go through, you hope, and we all say we learn from them. Well, you got to make sure you do learn from them. But these are the things that toughen you up and harden you up, and hopefully you're ready for the next turn.
If you were to advance, because this is a question I get a lot, as recent as yesterday at lunch, could the Flames play in a series like what we're watching right now with Boston and St. Louis? It's big, it's heavy, it's violent, all of that. How equipped do you think you would be in that scenario?
Well,
because I know you covet size, but you not at the expense of speed or skill. It's a hard balance.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think as you look at your team every year trying to get better, I mean, you'd like to have it all at once. You look at the steps we took and the changes we made to our team a year ago. I felt we needed to add. You need to be able to score in this league to have success. And too often for too long, we relied on too few. So we, We built some depth last year, and I mean, the regular season was proof. We were a difficult team to match up against. You know, our top, when our top guys were going, but even in the second half, when they sort of dropped off a little bit, you had contributions throughout the lineup. I think we finished third in the league in goals for. We were, I think, one or two in chances for. So that part of it was to build depth, to make sure that we had scoring throughout our lineup. You're always tweaking your lineup. I think at the end of the day, the team you want to be able to play any way the game's going to be played. And we see it in this sort of series that, and again, I think St. Louis is a big, their defense is big. They play heavy. There's a lot of contact with them. Boston, this isn't the big bad Bruins that we've been used to over the years. They may be the fastest team in the league, but they're able to, again, participate in and have success in a grind series. And that's probably an area that we want to continue to evolve in. You need to be able to have your team to say, okay, whether you're playing a fast team, you know, Brian talked about years ago talking to Bill Torrey, and to win a Stanley Cup, you got to be able to play Brian Burke.
Okay.
And talked about the need to be able to play any which way through four series. Yeah. You're going to play a big team. You're going to play a fast team. You're going to play a team built on specialty teams. So to answer your question, Boom, that's probably an area that we have to continue to evolve in. I think we do have some players. We've had some games that, you know, got into the ditch a little bit and got a little greasy throughout the year, and we have a lot of guys that thrive in those types of games. But you have to continue to, that's an area I think we have to continue to grow in, because no matter how much the game changes, at this time of the year, there's no space, you know, there's less calls, there's more intensity. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to, you can't just have a team that, you know, plays when it's nice. You have to be able to play when it's tight and hard, and certainly there's some areas that I think we can grow in that area.
Brad, you're living in studio. Went to Buffalo for the combine. You learned how the wingspan and how high they can jump and ride bikes, so that's good, right?
Yeah.
You're much smarter now because of all that?
Way smarter. No, it's, they do a good job with it. You know, I say all the time, you got to be a little bit careful with, you watch these kids, and when I say you watch them, the staff's been watching them in some cases 2 and 3 years. But this year specifically in the draft year that, you know, your staff is pretty in tune with these kids, not only on the ice, but we've done all of our digging off the ice and interviews and whatnot. So you got to be careful of all this information, and you either like them or don't like them as a hockey player, and then you sit in a room and spend a couple minutes with them or watch them do a long jump, and all of a sudden your mind changes. So it's a part of the puzzle, and we just got back from it now. Our Ryan Van Asten and his staff are sort of compiling their information. That goes all into the board, and we'll get that figured out for the next couple of weeks before we get to
Between Phoenix and here. Is there a player who's shocked you the most between either watching them at the combine and then sitting in a room with them, and you feel like, I'm not sure this guy's got a pulse, and then has made the NHL, and you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Is there anyone that stands out in that?
Well, I mean, there's a lesson for me always was Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and we loved Oliver. At that time, our staff was, you know, I mean, you're going back to November, December, when they're like, this kid has a chance to be special. So I had seen him play that year, his draft year, and gone over to, I think it was Leksand that he's playing in Sweden, but didn't spend any time with him. Then you see him walk into this room, and like, it took your breath away. Like, he looked gaunt. He looked like a greyhound dog that hadn't eaten in about a month, right? Yeah. And I'm like, this is the savior? And he's just turned out to be, in my estimation, one of the best defensemen in the game. So you got to be careful. Like I said, it's part of the puzzle. But I've seen it before where, you know, I remember one of the all time best performances at the combine was Dylan McElrath. You remember?
McElrath? Yeah, of course.
I mean, he was bench pressing a house, and everybody was watching him, and he's this big, strong guy, and you know, I think he ended up going 10th overall.
He went
to the Rangers, and you know, has played, but probably hasn't reach the level that people thought picking that spot. So you always got to be careful. It's a piece of the puzzle, and it's you garner information, but to ratchet a guy way up based upon what he's done at the combine or ratchet him down, you got to be just careful of that.
So your team as it sits, I'm going to call things up here on the old cap friendly and see where you're at.
Oh, you got the old.
I see you've got a restricted free agent here. What's he's 21 left winger Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
So RF,
he's requiring a new contract, restricted free agent.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, he's got no leverage.
Yeah.
What's he gonna do?
I mean, when I came in here, you probably thought I'd jump right on this one and update your rate.
Spill the beans. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he needs a new contract. We've been hard at work at it.
Is it not? And I try and have as normal a conversation because I know you can't say a lot.
Yeah.
They're all linked together. All of the RFAs right now. So in some respects, you have to work at it. But at the other, on the other side, it's like we can talk, but we both know nothing's. Yeah. You're in the friend zone right now.
It's an interesting time because it's an interesting time in the league because you've got, certainly the first time since I've been in the league, and I've been in the league a long time, that you've got this number of players, probably this level of player at this age.
Yeah.
And there's a number of them that have now come out. And we've seen recent contracts, specifically in Toronto, if you will, in the last year, through Nylander, Matthews, that, there's a feeling that this market change or this marketplace may be evolving, changing, what have you. So, all you can do is you just keep working away at it. And, we sat down.
So what does that look like? Keep working away at it. So you're calling the agent.
Yep.
And you guys discuss, because you don't want small talk. We're done with that.
Yeah, no. We've got a good relationship with his camp. And, we sat down and talked at the end of the season about sort of how we want this process to go. And one of the things we what's important to both sides. And I think everybody may just think, well, it's a contract and, we'll pay you this amount of money for this term. You walk through the whole process and what may or may be happening around the league and how it may or may not affect what you're doing. But, what we tried to establish is what was really critical and important for both sides. And after you go through that process, one of the things we talked about was trying to be, because they're all connected, right? We want to do other things to maybe improve our team. You can only do so much you can't do a whole lot before you get
this
Matthew's going to cost you. Yeah. Sam's going to cost you. We got David Rittich as an RFA. So we have to know what those things look like before we start going out and committing dollars elsewhere. So for us, trying to do things as quickly as we can, and that's not. Rushing it or being haphazard, but time sensitivity was a big issue for us. We want to look after Matthew. He's a vital part of our team. He's going to be an important key player here for a long, long time. So let's get him looked after, but keep in mind, we also may want to do some other things and we can't do step two before we get step one done.
Now, because I'm talking my way through it as well. When ordinarily in the past, when a team signs a player, the longer the term, the lower the cap hit. We'll give you more years, but the cap hit comes down. You look at Duncan Keith, signed for a long time, but the cap hit was nice and low. Now that has changed. That's not really the situation here because when you hear teams talk about buying unrestricted free agent years, that pushes the number up, correct? Like that's... A player wants to get to UFA as quickly as possible so that they can test the market and get the big payday. Yeah. Teams don't want to pay you because that was the controversy in Toronto. Why would you pay Matthews up until UFA? You want to buy those UFA years. Is that a big part of what these negotiations are like, is trying to come to a number on these UFA years?
It's everything, right? Because typically how you'd look at a, and not to bore everybody with contract talk, but every player's got certain rights. So, once we'll just use the average you know, the average player signs his entry level contract. After 3 years, comes out of his entry level contract. So that player there, use Andrew Mangiapane, right? So he comes out, he's now a restricted free agent with no arbitration rights, right? So you have a year or two where you have no arbitration rights. Then you have arbitration rights. So that gives you a different value, right? There's maybe a different premium placed upon having arbitration rights, not having arbitration rights. Then an RFA with arbitration rights versus UFA, there's a premium paid for UFA years. So when you look at a player coming out of his contract, and in Matthew's case, there's a different value placed upon each of those years,
right?
Because they have different rights associated with them. Some of them no arbitration, some of them arbitration, some of them UFA. So the challenge sometimes is valuing them. You may think they're worth X, so you have a restricted year with no arbitration rights. Mm-hmm. What's that worth? I may say it's X, you may say it's Y. Then we try to forecast 2 years from now and say, okay, if the player was to come out and he's now got arbitration rights, what would this look like in an arb case? You may say X, I may say Y. And then you go down the road to value UFA years. And the difficulty boom right now is valuing UFA years that may take place in 5 years. Look, what was the UFA market 5 years ago
as opposed to
what it is today? So you put enough of that in there and your brain will start spilling out your ears, right? So
I think it already might be.
That's the process that you go through. And then you've got an evolving marketplace, right? So you're looking around and saying, okay, if I'm the agent, I better be careful of what I sign today. Is what's that going to look like 2, 3, 4, 6 years down the road? So those are the challenges that you go through. And listen, like I said, we want to make sure in this particular case with Matthew and with all of our guys that they're looked after, and they've got themselves to look after and do what's right for them. We also have everybody else to take care of.
Of course. Right?
So we got 23 mouths to feed, and but we'll all you can do is continue to work away at it, and we'll get to a good resolution at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a pretty good job of this in terms of getting guys done. I think because Johnny was done pretty much eve of camp, right? Monahan got done earlier.
Well, no, Johnny actually missed camp. Johnny got done right before the night, day before, 2 days before the regular season.
Yeah, okay.
Now that was a World Cup year, so Johnny had been playing.
Right.
Monty got done in.
But you've never had, because you think of Nylander last year, and then you get to the end of the year and you hear Kyle Dubas saying, "Well, we probably would have been nice to get that done earlier." And Nylander says, "Well, I wish I had a con." It doesn't do anybody any good. It still happens, and I wonder at the end of the day how much money we're really talking about than what was on the table before training camp to what they signed for in November or whenever it is. But by now, is it not clear for everybody involved? We need to find common ground on a deal before a training camp or a season starts.
Yeah, I think that certainly that's the goal for everybody. Now, there's different leverage points and all those types of things, and ultimately, you've got to find a deal that works for both sides, right? So in whatever negotiation, the player wants to feel comfortable, the team's got to feel comfortable. And like I said, you've got all different factors that play into it. But I'm confident that we will, like I said, what I can say is both sides, we've had great dialogue. He's represented by Newport Sports, who are they're a top agency. They've done this before. They know what they're doing. We've got a real good relationship. But like any negotiation, we're grinding away and we'll get there.
So my word's not yours. I'm going to assume that a deal gets done. And for the 2019-20 season, Matthew's cap hit, let's give it a fluctuation point of $1 million.
What does that mean?
You'll get a deal done, whether it's 5, 6, 7 years. His cap hit next year, whether it's, I'm saying somewhere in between $1 million, just for breathing room.
$1 million of what?
A million difference.
Oh, okay.
So let's say it, because I don't want to throw a number out, because then you'll be mad.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I like that.
I'm saying, so your number's...
Whatever my number
three
is.
$3 million, and his is $4 million. Okay, so somewhere... What I mean is it's not going to be catastrophically different. You're not going to find, geez, we thought we were getting him here, but he got $5 million than we thought he was going to get.
I see.
You can still kind of forecast what the team's going to look like, mm-hmm. what kind of money you're going to have, because you have a number in your head. You know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that money more or less set aside
for
Kachuk.
We got Kachuk done.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, nice. Well done, Boom.
Bennett needs a contract.
Mm-hmm.
this kid, I mean, now he's got arbitration rights, but he still hasn't had the year that he's wanted to have in order to cash in on his arb rights. You hate arbitration. Players like it mm-hmm. until they have to go through it, and then they hear how terrible and awful they are when they go in with an arbitrator by a team. It's the worst thing possible. And David Rittich. Rittich's curious because I have, again, Sam Bennett, we kind of know. Okay, we kind of have an idea what
it's going to be. Yeah, and on that note, I'm not a – I don't hate arbitration. The one good thing – about it. So in Sam's case is, you know, if we're not able to come to an agreement prior to he's got arbitration rights, the good news is you will have a contract, right?
Yes.
So there is a resolution. Sometimes the process, I don't agree with the process in terms of, you know, I think we could have a better process, but hey, this is what we've got. And this is part of the CBA and this is how we operate. So the benefit of arbitration is, There's an end result, mm-hmm. But you know there's a process that you have to go through.
Okay.
So did we get that one done?
Kind of. I mean, it'll get done.
It'll get done. There's like you said. There's whether that's through and the other thing about the actual hearing, the number of hearings that actually happen versus the number of filings that take place, it has a way of bringing things to conclusion, right? Mm-hmm. So you're, you know, and just so people are aware of what arbitration, so the player has the right to file. If we aren't able to come to an agreement negotiated wise, you go in front of, you know, basically it's trial. So mm-hmm. The player pitches his position, the team pitches their position, an independent third party comes up with a ruling and determines the salary on either a 1 or a 2 year award. Where there's usually a lot of those things get settled prior to the hearing is 48 hours before the team and the player exchange their briefs. So 48 hours before I see what the player's argument and where the points they're going to make for their side.
Here's how great the player is.
Yep, and this is supporting what I want.
And then they see how terrible the player is.
We see our position, and that usually has a way to bring sides together a little bit and force a decision. But we have in the past gone through a hearing, and I'm perfectly comfortable doing that.
Is there ever any damage control needed in or after arbitration? Because I think the fans' perspective is the player says how great they are. You go in and just railroad the guy for like 3 hours.
And then it's like, hey, baby, come on.
No hard feelings,
baby. Right.
I think that gets overblown a little bit. Listen, as I tell the player, and we've gone through ones here, and two things, as I say, you know, don't be upset with the process. You filed, right? So mm-hmm. so you're the one that filed. You can't be upset with, if I call you out to the parking lot, I can't, you know, be upset if you punch me in the nose. So don't be upset with the process, but realize it's business. You know, this isn't a personal situation. I think for if you had not gone through one before and you sit through one, it's a little bit alarming. Nobody likes to sit across the table and you know, have somebody talk about the negative parts of, you know, their employment and all those types of things. So I think it's sort of an interesting process. But what we try to say to the team is, listen, this is not personal. This is part of the rights that you have and part of the process of arbitration. And what we have too is, remember, you're also represented by independent counsel. So we do a lot of our preparation in house, but we have an independent counsel that assists us in putting together our brief and then argues the brief. So they're not
a lawyer.
It's a lawyer,
yeah.
And so it's not necessarily me standing up there and calling out the guy. Where I think you'd like to remove it a little bit in terms of the emotion, but you know, for those that haven't gone through it before, it can be an interesting process.
Are you well, I saw your dad is a huge Raptors fan.
Oh Jesus. Seriously?
That was one of the funniest things about that whole, it's like, look at all these angles. The shot of the Kawhi Leonard buzzer beater.
Yeah.
Greatest moment in sports history in our country, and in the frame is your dad,
yeah,
stone faced.
I didn't know if he was asleep or had a stroke.
so funny. Yeah. And I loved he had to come out on his Twitter. Hey, listen, just so everyone knows, I was very excited. I was very focused on the shot.
Bored to tears. And keep an eye on the ball there, big boy.
Yeah. So. Last week, rumors. The Calgary Flames are possibly looking at trading TJ Brody or Travis Hamonic.
Am I supposed to, is this where I'm
supposed to I'm still establishing the point. My thought there is you could have probably gone through the NHL and just taken a look at any team and players with 1 year left. It's like, well, he's only got 1 year left. They might look at trading him. That said, there would be more probably meat on this bone just based on the depth you have, kids coming up. Valimaki needs space. Anderson can play. And to a certain extent, TJ Brody didn't have a great year.
Didn't have a great year?
I didn't think he had a great year.
What do you have? We had pretty good statistical numbers.
Oh, I'm more than points. Oh, I'm not a numbers guy.
You dig in deeper than that.
Yeah, plus minus is a, come on now. I'm big into the analytics, Brad. I'm a big analytics guy.
You look like a Corsi guy to
me. I wasn't sure about his Corsi. I'll be honest. His wowies were concerning to me.
Well, here's what I say.
Here's what it is. Honestly, you do have depth on the blue line. If you are looking to get something done, if there's going to be any movement made or changes made, you probably have some. Is it safe to say that's where?
Sure. I mean, we've got players there. And I mean, I'm not going to comment on rumors and all these things. I say to the guys, that's part of it. There's a lot of, we're privileged and fortunate to play in the league, the guys that do. And there's lots of great things that come with it. Mm-hmm. And on the 1st and 15th, you get a check that's real nice and all those sorts of things. This is part of being a professional athlete. Is there is speculation and rumors and all those things. We don't comment on it. And you're right. You can go around and pick any team and find guys who's got a year left in the contract and make a case of why this guy should go here, that guy should go there. You know, the one thing I always want to caution people about is I thought our defense was, a big part, a driving force for us and especially that top four for us. And we do have young guys. They're coming along. I think Rasmus Anderson took a big step this year. I think Yusuf Alamaki is going to be a real good player. Mm-hmm. Oliver Shillington came in and played the lion's share of the season here with us. You know, the only thing you caution for is there's a difference of playing in a third pairing at 14 minutes a night against third and fourth lines versus playing in a top pairing 23, 24 minutes a night against first and second line. So where you slot people and who people play against is a big part of the league and making sure you got people in the right chairs. So again, we've got depth in that position, but you got to be careful that you're putting people in the right seats moving forward. And like I said, that's what the off season is for, is you look and see, is there ways to improve your team? And that's not to say we're moving anybody. What I would probably comment on is as those players enter their final season, that's, you either you're looking at trying to extend people, or potentially seeing, mm-hmm. What you do there. So you don't necessarily ever want to get to a position where those players are playing out their contract and leaving for nothing. But we have got a long time, between now and any of those players with a year left sort of exiting or before we have to make decisions there.
What about any UFAs? Mm-hmm. You have a number of those. We'll talk goaltenders in a moment. Fantenberg came in, and I thought he was fine. I thought he was all right, mm-hmm. as a stopgap, a depth guy. Garnet Hathaway kind of emerged this year, but there again, guy is 27. He's a UFA. How much do you want to pay for a guy in that role? Just can you share anything UFA wise?
Yeah, same sort of thing. You're trying to determine how much you've got for each of these positions, right? Like it comes back to our earlier point.
Blame Tkachuk.
No, don't blame me. You're trying to determine how much is going to be taken up in each of these sort of pockets and
it is that though, right?
Yeah. I try to say it's not, there's a process that you go through, but it's simple math. You got X to spend, you got a roster of Y or 23 guys, figure it out. Right. So that's why we're trying to determine on these other situations of what does that cost look like? We don't stop doing business, right? We're not sitting here and, like I said, we know whose contracts are going to be up next year and the year after. So you're always trying to plan, but until we can have a little bit of certainty of where our dollars are going to land on some of our guys right now, it's hard to say, okay, how much do we have in other spots? Now, Garnett's a player we'd love to have back. I thought he took a real step forward. I thought we've developed him. This is a guy we've signed on an American League deal. He went down to Stockton and good for him. He's really put the work in. He's a tremendous kid, works his tail off and has turned himself into an NHL player. We'd love to have him back. Again, he's also, we're in the right now to become a UFA. And so those talks will continue. And we'll just see how all this puzzle fits and if we can make it all fit.
Goaltending?
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect to have the same tandem?
Well, I would say this.
You like the way I asked that?
Yeah, that was very coy.
Mm-hmm.
David Rittich, we're going to get him signed. Mm-hmm. Again, he's got Arbright. So,
close? Like today? Close?
I wouldn't say you should stand by for any breaking news. and then I talked to Mike. Mike would like to return. I thought the narrative with Mike all year was, you know, there was sort of a negative narrative with him. But if you really look at it and step back and actually look at the numbers, he had a tough start. He'd be the first to tell you that. But he was very good from the new year on, and everybody saw what he did in the playoffs. So we'll see, but it's all got to fit. What is Mike looking for? What is that contract? It's all going to make sense. So
do you have a dollar figure for the pairing? Is that how that works? We want to have X invested in two goaltenders, regardless how it's split.
Well, you've got to listen. We've probably got about 15 different scenarios here. Again, depending on what else you may do. So we've got a number in mind necessarily for the pairing, but what each individual guy may look like. But again, it all depends on, you know, if something else costs X, where may we have to do something to allocate some money. Exactly. So there's a lot of moving targets right now. It makes for an interesting time and a busy time, but we'll get there.
In terms of drafted players that need to be signed or re-enter the draft, where are you on those types of players?
We're all set there. We've passed on two players, Jolie from the Quebec League and Fisher here, who actually played in the Western League. And then we had brought him in on an American League deal last year, and he played a little bit in Stockton and in Kansas City for us. So those players from the 17 draft were both up, and we've elected not to sign them. Fisher will become a UFA, and Jolie will re-enter the draft. Those were the two decisions for this year.
Man, you got RFAs down there too.
Lots of guys. Lots of guys that were in Stockton that are...
with arbitration rights.
A few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got...
got to get some work done. Hey, like, what are you doing sitting in here with me?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing in here sitting with you most times. Never mind today.
You know what? People are loving it because when we were in LA, I threw the question at you. It's like, do you want to ask him about his Russian goaltender again? So you signed a Russian goaltender.
Yeah, that's right.
What?
Oh. Zagadulin. Yeah. Say that three times fast.
Zagadulin.
How did
you get to this?
Well, similar guy, Derek McKinnon, Hawk and Lube, who's our, you guys have heard of Hawk and Lube before, right? He's our head European scout, and Hawkins done a great job for us there. Robert Neuhauser, who, works out of the Czech Republic. And Derek McKinnon, who's a pro scout, our head pro scout over here, and works with the European staff and goes over there, and Bobby Hagelin and Ari Humpa. So we've got a fairly...
Those aren't real people.
Those are real
Ari fears. Humpa?
And so we've got... they had identified him, the same process we went through to find David Rittich, however many years ago. So I don't know a lot about this guy. I've watched him on video. Our guys think he's obviously got some upside. We're not projecting him to be one of the two goalies here next year. But real good numbers the last couple of years in Russia. Sort of a tall, lanky kid. He'll be over here for development camp, and we'll get a chance to get our hands on him.
Speaking of goalies, and I think some people, because when we talk about it here, people will text in and say, well, John Gillies has got a year, and it's a one-way deal. That's not going to affect... I mean, some would think that gives him a leg up. It's going to purely depend on level of play, correct?
Certainly. And, John, after having a tough start last year, John finished the year real good. He was as good as any goaltender in that league down the stretch. He's had, I think that was his fourth year pro now. And there's been some peaks and valleys, mm-hmm. and not all the development curves are straight up. You know, there is some peaks and valleys with it. So certainly John, in his mind, if you ask John, he feels he's at that point in his career where he's ready to be in the league on a full-time basis. So that's another determining factor with us is John one. I know the narrative all last summer at this time was, okay, who's going to back up Mike? And geez, David Rittich, and did he have a tough time through, when Mike got hurt and all the rest of it? I remember having the conversation with you, Boom. We felt real comfortable. Is David had a great rookie season. When the light was shining brightest and Mike got hurt, did he have some stumbles? Yeah, but that's part of learning to play in the league. So we thought he and us were going to come out of the other side of it better off than we did. I thought he had a great year this year. Is John ready now? Maybe he is. That's all things that we're going to look at right now is what gives us the best chance. I would say this, we're trying to find, I don't think we're in the position right now where we're going to say David is, and there's very few in this league that you're rolling out for mm-hmm. 70 plus games or 65 plus games.
Yeah.
Now we think David's capable of, what do you play this year? 45, 46 games. Who can come in there and support him best and partner with him best? That's a question we'll answer throughout the summer.
As you look at those spots, kind of like with the backup goaltender, it's like if we allocate more money in one spot, that'll affect this. Mm-hmm. Dylan Dubé, 2 years ago, great year. Last year came in. I thought he was, again, it's a guy jumping from the Western League to the NHL at the center spot. That's tough to do. How confident are you if it comes to it saying, yeah, I think Dylan Dubé can be in the NHL. I think he's ready.
I think he's going to real push hard. Now, if you ask Dylan, and I say to all our guys, if you clearly earn a spot, right? If you earn a spot, you're going to be here. I don't care about the contracts. Mm-hmm. And both him and people said in the past, well, geez, this guy should be here. I mean, you got to be careful of you have to clearly be better than somebody in the preseason. And Dylan was that. Dylan was, I think he tied the league.
He was great.
In scoring. So we earned a spot to be here. Yusuf Välimäki, the same thing. We ended up moving Brett Kulak, who's a good guy and a good player. And we had depth on the left side. We had waived him a couple of times, but we weren't prepared to put him in the minors. And we wanted to give Yusuf Välimäki and Oliver Shillington a real look-see there. So as games went on, it was shown that I'm not going to have a kid playing, a 20-year-old kid playing 8-9 minutes a night here. He went down and was a dominant player in the American Hockey League. So he's checked that box. Now, is he ready to come up here? As we talked at the opening about our team's at that stage now where, this isn't the development league up here.
Yeah.
We need you, if you can help us win, whether you're 20 or 30, that's going to be the challenge for Dylan. Is he ready to step into our lineup and help us win? I think he's going to push real hard. I know that he had a real eye-opener about how hard the league is, how strong the guys are, and I know he's determined to have a good summer. So he's a guy that I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's on our opening day roster.
Yeah. As we get close to the draft, I think it's closer than some of us appreciate. Certainly not for you because you've been, I guess, getting ready for it. What's talks amongst general managers? Is it high right now? Is it starting to build? And hearing a lot of names. I mean, you can't talk about them, but Phil Kessel and Patrick Marleau, like, we're hearing some different names that are already out in the ether. What's the talks right now with other GMs?
Well, it's busy. I mean, really, when you get to the combine too, part of the combine is going through the process with the prospects, but all the managers are there. So I met with most of the managers or had conversation with most of the managers at the combine or around the combine. And now you're talking to them every day. Everybody's doing the same thing. It's how do you make your team better? Everybody's got a little different situation, whether it be from their cap situation, who they got to sign. You know, the RFA situation is everybody's, you know, there's a lot of guys that have them this year, a lot of guys that maybe are paying attention to it because they got a guy up next year. So this is everybody. I know everybody thinks this is the off season, but really from the time the season ends till you get to the first week of June or July, a lot of work is getting done here right now. And so those conversations are going on in earnest and you're preparing for the draft. That's where the time is being spent right now.
Where do you split your time between going to the combine, watching kids, watching game tape, and talking to other general managers and trying to, whether it's like just trades, acquisitions that can make your roster better?
That's probably where a lot of my time is, the dialogue with the managers. Now, I'm involved with the draft, but Todd Button and even Don Maloney's heavily involved with that.
And Ari Humppa.
And Ari Humppa, from Finland. So I'll mention that to Ari. I'll show you a picture of him. The guy exists, right? It's a real guy. As we get closer to Vancouver, like this week, we've got some finishing touches on the draft. There's some guys that we have to do a little bit more digging on. So between Todd, his staff, our amateur staff, and with Don's involvement, we've got a setup. Here's the last bits that we need to tie in. They'll handle that. Then we'll meet on it probably end of the week or beginning of this week, and we'll finalize our board. And a lot of mine right now is between just a lot of discussion with managers to find out. I mean, my job is to make sure I know what's going on in the league, right? The information is the capital that you trade here.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to guys daily, as well as, you know, managing our overseeing these contracts that we're trying to get done.
Like a year ago right now, had you had a good idea that the Lindholm-Hanifin deal would be in place?
No.
Three weeks out?
We'd had a lot of discussions. We probably talked to Carolina for a month leading up to the draft on a lot of different situations.
Yeah.
We knew what we wanted to do. You know, we wanted to get... our focus was these two players. And it's... You know, so there was... We were looking at different ways to skin the cat, and then when the situation came down, and just to give a little background, because I know there's been lots of discussion about it, is Dougie, we obviously put Dougie in the deal. Michael Ferland was a guy we liked a lot. Michael, you know, again, you look back a year from now, Michael's a pending unrestricted free agent. That was one of our, whether we were going to be able to re-sign the player.
Yeah.
And then Adam Fox, I mean, people have talked about throwing. Adam Fox wasn't a throw-in in the deal. First of all, the deal doesn't get done without Adam in the deal. And we had had extensive talks with Adam for a year about coming. And it was very clear, made very clear to me, that Adam was not going to sign with us. And so you manage that of saying, okay, well, what is the market for Adam outside of putting him in this deal? And you're managing that. This deal wasn't, you know, somebody talked to me, well, you just threw it in. We're not in the business of just throwing people in. So to make a comment like that is ignorant to what the process was, and the deal that we did wouldn't have happened without Adam. We looked at it as two players that we're going to be able to control at that time for up to 7 years. We signed them both I think they're 6-year contracts. But it probably didn't formalize, boom, till 24 hours, 48 hours the night before.
Yeah. So, because the next question I have is, do you have something in the works potentially right now that you can envision happening come draft weekend?
You've got lots on the go.
Yeah.
And you never know which, you know, we've had discussions with things that we've probably talked about for 18 months. I had a conversation with a guy the other day that revisited a topic we've been talking on probably 18 months.
Is that right? Yeah.
So you never know where these, go, right? And the way the market is right now and the fluidity of it, again, because of the financial piece where some of these contracts are going. And so you've got to be nimble a little bit, and like I said, each team's situation is a little bit different. So, and that's not to say that anything could get done, right? We've tried to be aggressive, not just because we like to, you know, do deals at the draft, but I feel that's the time when you're trying to improve your team. We've tried to be aggressive to see if there's ways that we can improve at that time, and we've done some deals at the draft. That's not to say we're going to do anything now.
Yeah, because trade deadline, there's only so many teams that are looking to buy.
Yeah.
Whereas at the draft, everyone has currency in terms of picks. Everyone is looking to improve that whole thing, and it's been fun to watch. You're not boring when it comes draft time. I'll say that.
Wow.
Sometimes you're on the podium.
My wife would disagree. Would probably.
Yeah.
That,
you're, but, no, you're a dullard there. But sometimes you're on the podium. Sometimes you're not. But it has been a chance for you to make hay.
I was just wondering that there's a couple fairly notable things happening in the NHL world over the next couple years, potentially a new CBA, as well as a new hockey team coming in with an expansion draft to Seattle. Do either of those things kind of hang over any decisions that are made over the next year and a bit here?
Well, the CBA, you got to be careful. I mean, the biggest thing you've seen with the new CBA or potential expiry of the CBA is a lot of the potential work stoppage, things that have happened to contracts. Specifically, mm-hmm. You've seen signing bonus and contracts structured in a certain way from the player side where they want to protect themselves in case of a work stoppage. So you can't necessarily foresee what changes may happen. So as far as CBA, it's pretty much normal course. The expansion draft you keep in mind, but the expansion draft that will happen for Seattle, any move that you make that contractually covers those times, you have to take into account. So we've already sort of drawn up a little bit, and it's the same rules for Seattle that it was for Vegas. So as we look at our roster and contemplate anything that may have term or may have impact going 2 years beyond, we play around with that in terms of, okay, how does this affect us expansion wise? So you're already, you've got that. That's another one of the boxes that you need to check as you go through that process. But that's about it. I mean, those two things, that to the extent of managing Seattle, that's really what it is.
How much does it help that you've already been through this process once just a couple years ago?
I think it's certainly helpful, right? Mm-hmm. Like I said, that you're you know, it's the same rules. It will be interesting when we get down to that summer of prior to the team starting, exactly how many deals are done. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion and talk and sort of armchair quarterbacking after the fact of how some of these deals took place. And you know, there's still going to be stuff to get. Now, people say, well, that Seattle GM, nobody's going to do deals with them. Well, we'll see, right? If you're mm-hmm. sitting there at the time, you see you can only protect X amount of players and you want to protect certain assets, we'll see how that all takes place. But it certainly will be, anytime you've gone through something once, you've got that experience and you're hopefully better the second time around. So I think I think that's what everybody's thought is. They'll be a little bit better prepared for it this time around.
Thanks for swinging by.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Always good
guys.
Having you in. Yeah. No breaking news, anything you could... Do it right here. Spare a press conference.
No, nothing.
Breaking
nothing
news. Right. Oh,
there it is. We got the breaking news splitters playing. Brad Treliving is pleased to announce he takes two cream in his mm-hmm. Tim Hortons, apparently. That's what we can tell you this morning.
That's the,
yeah. Good to see you. Take care. Thanks for coming
Thanks
by.
Thanks for having me, guys.